So this is podcast two in the 2016 revision suite of podcasts for planning and public policy. In the previous one, we reached the point where we were having a very brief first look at the Perth and Kinross cultural strategy, the document that will provide the supporting material. Why have I chosen this one? Well, let's have a think about it in the context of public sector agencies and related organisations. Because I think that in and of its, intrinsic value to the people of Perth and Kinross, I think for us it's a good example of this kind of document. It's a good example of something that is written for a wide variety of audiences, be they within the industry, be they public sector, be they students, be they whoever it is, members of the public, who want to see what is it that our council is trying to achieve. And this is the kind of document that you get from the public sector, where they are very explicitly saying, we're here to promote the interests of a broader public, and we recognise that we're working with taxpayers' money, and we're having to meet a variety of different outcomes. So that's the kind of stuff that I think is contained in that document. It is a good example of that. As we developed our discussion around public sector agencies, yes, we had a look at some of their key roles, some of the key jobs that they do, and so on. And the fact that these sorts of organisations exist is an interesting one in itself. You know, this is people whose job it is not to necessarily deliver specific events, but who are there to support the cultural industries or events or festivals or whatever it might be on behalf of the public, or at least making that link between the public sector, government and the public, and, you know, different public interests, public good and so on. So what do they do? Well, this might be to do with planning and strategy and research and policy and so on. As we looked through some of the different slides, we had some material there from Bowdoin et al., where they pick out things like funding, networking, working with such networks. They talk about training and education and research and so on. And this all sounds very rosy, very good. Gets and Frisbee followed up in Gets and Page talk about facilitation, so they will facilitate, they will enable things to take place, and it ties in with what we heard from David Waddle, for example, where he was talking about trying to provide a regulatory environment where people can come along to them and provide, and you know, they will help them manage their events, providing technical support, financial, marketing and so on. And we heard similar things from Sarah Blackwell as well when it came to Event Scotland. More on her in a second. But Getz and Page do then pick up the idea that there might be a line between facilitating and actually intervening. And I've already mentioned accountability once in this revision podcast set, and some of the questions there in that interventionist slide, as it were, talk about, well, look, how is everyone accountable here? And why do some events and projects and festivals get assistance when others maybe don't? I think here we're starting to get into the realms of what are the, positive and negative elements of what these organisations can do, or at least where are their strengths and where are their potential weaknesses and limitations? Getting this idea that it's not all plain sailing, and that isn't necessarily just a case of, well, look, we're doing our best and everyone would do the same in the same circumstances. Politics tends to mean that there is discussion to be had, that there are different viewpoints, that there are different ways of looking at different topics. So on that basis, to what extent will one person's interests win out over another? Will one stakeholder get their way when others don't? Now, as we developed and had a look through some of the different slides, we had a look at some Richards and Palmer work, and they're starting to, I think, touch on some of those same themes. Yes, they talk about accountability and sustainability, equitability in event organisation and participation and so on. But a lot of what they talk about in their work tends to be, well, how can we produce the right environment in which festival and event producers feel they can take risks, invest, do whatever it might be. And, you know, that's going to mean giving them certain freedoms, perhaps. It's going to mean giving them certain rights that come with winning a contract to run an event and so on. If you're running Edinburgh's Hogmanay, one of the rights you get is that the council will help you shut the main street down in Edinburgh's heart, the capital of Scotland. And, you know, for 24 hours, we'll just shut the road. Thanks very much. So, yes, there are some discussions there. And I think that this leads us into the work we looked at when it came to Creative Scotland, because a few years back, they were having some real issues with one of their key stakeholder groups, that being the creative industries themselves, where there was a sort of breakdown in communication, maybe, or at least a sense that the agency wasn't doing its job. It wasn't supporting the work that these people were trying to produce for a whole variety of reasons. And I would urge you to have a look at that Guardian article. And then we branched this out with a whole discussion about different political perspectives and so on. Now, in terms of specific examples, I've mentioned David Waddle and his work around the City of Edinburgh Council. Also, we had Sarah come in from Event Scotland. So as I've noted a couple of times, it's not normal, it's not usual to have an agency that exists purely to support the events in a particular country. Not many places have it. So their job is to, well, it's to coordinate, it's to fund, it's to provide additional support. They don't want to be a core funder for anything. But what they do want to do is trying to help you make the most of your event. So that's the way that one went. Okay, now this is going to give me how long. I've got about 3 minutes left before the end of this podcast. So I'll briefly talk about the third learning outcome. You see, we're going through them 1 to 5 here, and 1 to 4. The third one is about the European Union. And as you will probably see from previous exams, when it comes to Europe, it tends to mean for us European City of Culture projects. So there are a whole variety of different cities out there who have taken this opportunity to run a year's worth of events. And maybe for some of them, this was really branching out into the relative unknown. But hey, it's an opportunity to do so, and off they go. Now, built into both the sorts of examples that we looked at in the seminar, the sorts of examples that I used in my lecture slides, and also in the European Union's ambitions for the project, at all those different levels, there is a real link there between trying to achieve certain outcomes. And I think, therefore, whether this is the kind of the triumphal success of an instrumentalist agenda or not, you can think about for your own sake. But hey, the idea of using events to try and achieve certain outcomes certainly is there, and that's what we tried to explore in the seminars. I've mentioned instrumentalism. This seems a reasonable place in which to drop that in as well. Keep in mind that there is a video on Moodle that looks at the difference between instrumental and intrinsic value. And the way we looked at it was to pick out the extent to which arguing for an instrumentalist set of values for events and festivals has perhaps limits in terms of its value and its use. Yes, it may underpin a lot of this module. Yes, it may underpin your coursework if you feel that way. But let's not forget that it doesn't come without its problems. Now, we looked at that partly from my retelling of a few pages from the Foley et al, and also from our discussions around Belfiore and her defensive instrumentalism argument. There's a whole range of ideas there. There's some bits of reading that you can have a look at. And yeah, getting this idea into our heads that it's not always going to be a wonderful state of affairs to be trying to use events and festivals and culture and whatever to try and achieve policy outcomes. To what extent does that risk losing the value of the project or the culture itself? Who gets to decide what's valuable? Hey, that's it for part two. Back in a sec.